think I'm pretty clever putting the microphone on top of the inverted ice bucket. Yeah, I don't need the ice bucket. I like my ice room temperature, so I think this is working out quite well. Yeah, I tried to clamp the pop filter on the coffee maker, but it didn't work. Well, the coffee maker was just too unstable, so that didn't work out. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender, broadcasting to you from a Quality Inn in Bristol, Virginia. I was visiting friends over Christmas, and I'm on my way home, and too far to go in one day for little me. So I'm holing up here, and I'm pretty proud of my makeshift studio. I've stacked up some pillows against the wall to try to dampen the reverb a little bit. Plus, I don't want the guy in the room next to me to hear these secrets of God. I'm very shy, you know. It's not that I'm ashamed of the gospel. It's just that if somebody hears me in here talking about God, I'm honestly afraid that they'll think I'm a Christian. And nothing would embarrass me more than somebody thinking I'm a Christian. If I could bang on the wall and explain to the guy that I'm teaching the true word out of Scripture and I'm not a Christian, I'd do it. But it's Sunday. So what's that guy going to think? It's Sunday and somebody's talking about the Bible? He's going to think I'm a Christian. I can't risk it. So I'm going to talk a little quieter than usual. All right. I'm not going to get too bombastic. All right. We're talking about the discipline of God. And let's, this is again transadministrational. The Hebrews were going through it. We're going through it now. And Paul dedicates an entire chapter to the discipline of the Lord. Let's read in verse 10, starting with of Hebrews chapter 12. For these indeed, speaking of our fathers, all right, let's go to verse 9. We had fathers of our flesh as discipliners, and we respected them. This isn't an ideal world. Our world's not ideal. In fact, I was just looking out the window here. I'm overlooking a greenhouse and a Dollar General. And it's pretty overcast and sloppy out there. It's no snow, thank God. But I was just thinking, you know, the world is a really crappy place. It really is a dangerous place now. Very potentially depressing place. Children don't respect their parents anymore. Paul predicted this in 2 Timothy. There will be no natural affections anymore like there used to be. And this is a result of many things. Fast-paced life, entertainments, degrading of customs, social values, things like that. But ideally, we respected our fathers and our parents as discipliners. So how much more should we be subjected to our ultimate Father God, who is disciplining us for our good? My dad disciplined me. I got spanked when I was a kid. I know it shocks you to know that I did things worthy of discipline, but it's true, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, and I respected my dad for it. I turned out into a decent human being that I am today because of my parents. So shouldn't I respect God even more? And I'm telling you, sometimes God has disciplined me so hard, and I've gotten upset at him, and I've said, look, my dad never disciplined me like this. You're crazy. I've said this to God in extreme circumstances. But then I settled down and I remembered this verse. Verse 10, for these, our parents indeed disciplined us for a few days as it seemed best to them, yet that one, capital O, for our expedience, for us to be partaking of his holiness. God is doing this for us, not to us. I've told you that phrase many times, for you, not to you. I'm preaching to myself. All discipline indeed for the present is not seeming to be a thing of joy, no kidding, but of sorrow. Yet subsequently, afterwards, it is rendering the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Paul and Silas in jail in Philippi, I think of this first and foremost. When they're out in the marketplace getting beaten with rods, they're not singing hymns then. They don't sing hymns until later when they're in the stocks in the inner jail and at least have some time to contemplate, to be quiet. It's subsequent. That's the subsequent time. And then then the discipline rendered its peaceable fruit. What's the fruit? It's been graciously granted you to suffer for the sake of Christ, because you're coming into a remarkable reward. That's the fruit. And you don't get this fruit when you're in the trial. Listen to my talk I gave in the Johnstown Fellowship. Go to studyshelf.com. I talked about how you're feeling when you're in the trial. You don't have these magnificent thoughts when you're in the trial. Go to studyshelf.com videos. Go to the Johnstown Fellowship that we hold at the airport. You're not praising God when you're going through it. You're not singing hymns while they're beating the daylights out of you with rods. That comes later. If you trained the camera on any face of any disciple getting beaten or pelted with rocks, you're not seeing an expression of joy, peace, love, happiness, patience. But it yields peaceable fruit, and the discipline of God does the same thing. Don't expect too much of yourself while you're in the discipline. Subsequently, it is rendering the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those exercised through it. You're coming through this thing. This thing that's happening to you, it came to pass. My favorite saying, it didn't come to stay, it came to pass. Love that saying. Now, verse 12, wherefore stiffen the flaccid hands and the paralyzed knees, and make upright tracks for your feet, that the lame one may not turn aside, yet rather may be healed. In other words, get a backbone, get tough, stiffen the flaccid hands. You know, this also applies to those who discipline, to you parents who ought to be spanking your children when they misbehave, seriously causing them pain. I did this to mine. None of these token slaps. Hey, no, you hurt them for their own good. I know it's politically incorrect to say that. I don't care. Stiffen the flaccid hands. Be manly. Even you women need to be manly. Paul says be manly. He's talking to both sexes. Have a backbone. And not only having a backbone in the administration of discipline, but in taking it. And Paul is concerned that people faint. People faint from discipline. And it's very possible to faint from the discipline of the Lord, because my gosh, it's hard. It's ridiculous sometimes. I consider it ridiculous. And I'm starting to give myself a break on that, and you should too. Subsequently, it's yielding peaceable fruit, not while it's happening. Wherefore, stiffen the flaccid hands and the paralyzed knees, and make upright tracks for your feet, that the lame one may not turn aside, yet rather may be healed. This discipline is coming to make you whole, to make you a better person. And you're going through it now. And I know you're jealous of the people who aren't going through in it. They're just la, 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 la through life, and you're getting the tar wailed out of you. And you think it's not fair, but it is fair. It's not fair for them. If you want to say it's not fair, go ahead. It's not fair for the other person, because they're going to get it later. And it's going to be worse. You're getting it now. And it's better now than getting it later. Because your discipline is coupled with faith. That's what this whole Hebrews book is about, faith. It takes faith to believe that God is doing this for you, not to you. I realize that. Now look at this. Before I go to verse 14, let me read A.E. Knox. My pillow's coming down. Wait a minute. I just bumped one of my pillows, and now I get an avalanche of pillows here. Why do they have so many? I got two beds here. I only need one. And they have three pillows in each bed. I got six pillows. I got one, two, three, four pillows stacked up here in my pillow kingdom. And I'd be started an avalanche there, but I think I stopped the bleeding. Okay, I want to read from A.E. Knox's commentary on this, because as always, Knox says so much in so few words. Listen to this. God's discipline is too often mistaken for his indignation. That's right. That's what our buddy Joel Osteen thinks. He thinks that if God is being mean to you, then something's wrong with your faith, something's wrong with your behavior, you're not pleasing God, and so they think God's indignation is on you, when in fact, God's doing you a favor. Listen to this. God's discipline's too often, especially in Pentecostal circles where everything's supposed to go swell for you, too often mistaken for his indignation. The presence of trials and distresses are not a proof of sin and God's anger, but may be the tokens of his love. not maybe, for us, they are the tokens of his love. Now, even if this is tricky, because even if it's something you did, quote, to screw yourself up, you know, you can say, well, something happened to me from the outside. For instance, I was driving along in my car. Somebody ran the stop sign. I got whopped. I ended up in the hospital. It's that guy's fault. So I'm cool. All right, you can take it then. But what if you were at fault? What if you were the one who ran the stop sign because you were trying to find your favorite radio station? Okay, this is harder to deal with, but I want to comfort you to tell you that that's still God. It's still God, whether you're responsible or somebody else is responsible. You say, well, no, it was a flaw of my character. The song was more important than paying attention. Yeah, we all have flawed characters. God uses your flawed character. I wrote a book called Flawed by Design. Your flawed character is part of the discipline God is bringing to your life. So it's not only things coming from the outside, it's things coming from the inside, from you, from your flaws. So you screwed up. Okay, so you smoked for too many years and got lung cancer. That's still a discipline. And yes, it came from you, but that's only indirectly. That's the relative cause. The absolute cause is God. And it's not a proof of his anger against you. When you believe, when you're a believer, everything's sanctified. Even your faults, your flaws, even they are sanctified. Now look at Job's friends. Job's friends tried to convince him that all his trouble came because of a penalty of his own misdeeds. I forgot to turn my phone off. My phone's ringing. But I'm going to ignore it. Hang on a second. Let me let that finish so I can concentrate. Stop. Stop. Okay. Let's look at Job. Now, Job's friends thought that the reason all this bad stuff happened to him was because he was a screw-up. He did something wrong, and they're trying to get him to analyze his life. Job, you must have some secret sin. You don't watch Joel Osteen enough. You don't go to the deliverance ministries. And they're analyzing his walk and trying to, they're putting the squeeze on him. And Job's like wrestling, trying to figure out what he did. And he finally says, look, I didn't do anything wrong. And it's true. But he did do one thing wrong. Really, he was self-righteous. He did everything right. That was his problem. He did everything right. And he might have been thinking that his good life was because he was doing right things. But it's not. It wasn't related. Because, now I'm going to quote Nock here, Job himself thought that God was his enemy and had conspired against him. That's what he thought at first. Everything went wrong, but the result is what you have to look at. And at the end of the book of Job, you see that Job comes to a realization of God. Everything God did to him is vindicated because Job sees him. He sees a larger picture of God at the end. Remember, Job says at the end there, he says, I heard of you with the hearing of my ears. Now I see you. He's a deeper, more intimate relationship with God because of his afflictions. Because of his afflictions. And it's going to be the same with you. When you learn, you see, you have to learn. Jesus Christ, even he learned obedience through the things that he suffered. And we also learn how to be disciplined. And you don't have to learn how to look good during it. You don't have to learn how not to cuss. You don't have to learn how not to be upset. Look at Job for a guy of being upset, you know, and he cursed the day he was born. He said, woe to me. And he just laments for a couple chapters. And yet God says that Job spoke the right things. Let your maker know what's happened to you, what's happening to you. If you can't tell your maker, who can you tell? But when it's done, it will yield peaceable fruit, and that fruit will be righteousness.